Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, as ever, Louis McCaffrey. And this week, I am joined by the exact same panel, exact same starting 11, or starting three, as last week. First up, Christopher Gallagher, what's popping? What's the vibes today, my man?
Nicely done.
See what I've done there? See what I've done?
Very good. Wee in-joke from thecynic.co. If you get yourself involved and subscribe, you'd get all the in-jokes. I'm good, Louis. In our 10th year, the week that we kind of came into existence, I thought it would be good to have the same starting 11, the same starting three, the panel of just the three of us just chatting away. So it's great to be here, and I love being part of the weekly.
Yes, indeed. It's where we all started. We're all very humble. We're all OGs here. And there's no greater original gangster than this man himself. It is Christopher Somani. How are you, Christopher?
Terrific. Feeling humble, acting humble, being humble. Great to be on the spiritual home and a cynic. Yep, just being humble. Let's get on with things.
So, Manny, were you a kid that you chucked school with a few days to go before Christmas, or did you get in right to the end?
Mostly chucked it with a few days to go. Why? That's, you know, just, what's that got to do with Celtic? As my first question.
Listen, well, it's not all about the Celtic, it's about life. I want to know about you as a person. You know what I mean? Gal, what did you do? Did you stay in the house and play with your wrestlers, or did you go into school and dominate life?
I can assure you that I was campaigning my mother to be off the last week of school from about the 2nd of December, just campaigning like a mayoral candidate, just saying, look, here are the pros, here are the cons. There's not as many cons as there are pros. Please, can I stay off? So, yeah, and, you know, and the other thing is my birthday's on the 29th of June. So, you know, it was great because for my birthday, I'd be off for the summer holidays. And because I was so good at just, please let me off, I'd eventually get off for Christmas. So it was great.
Yeah, I mean, as a teacher, it really pisses me off. And I walked into school today and there was some, you know, one class walked in and there was seven of them. I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, there's at least five too many. But fair enough. Shout out to all the parents there that are just getting up the teachers and their own kids by sending them in on the last week. That's brilliant. We're gonna break from tradition. What we usually do is we talk about the football and we start with the games and go chronologically. But of course, there has been some news tonight that broke earlier on this evening. That basically restrictions are going to be in place from some of them from Boxing Day, really. And how this affects football is that football crowds are going to be limited to 500 fans. Now, that's 500 fans regardless of the size of the stadium. So, obviously, our 60,000-seater stadium is still going to have 500 when other ones smaller stadium will have the same, which doesn't seem at all appropriate proportionate. So the new COVID rules have been brought in different clubs are trying to campaign to have the winter break brought forward, which we will of course get to in a wee minute. So Manny, tell us when you saw the news. I mean, it wasn't exactly a bolt out of the blue. Even the figure of 500 was being kind of rumoured all afternoon. What's your thoughts on it?
It's a bit... I'm sickened by it, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I think when there was some discussions about restrictions being put in place, you knew that they would go for football. Now, they'll talk about it being, you know, sporting events outside gatherings, things like Hugmanay's cancelled, things like, you know, some of the racing is being done behind closed doors. But football is the first thing they go for. And essentially, when they're talking about large crowds, they're talking about, you know, Celtic games, Rangers games, you know, games at Hampden or whatever, and the reason for that is because of the significant size of the crowd. It's the immediate go-to thing, and for me, it's just an automatic reach for the SNP in terms of what they've done without getting too political about this. And it is always, I mean, let's take our mind back. See if COP26 was this week. Nothing would change. Absolutely nothing would change. You know, that things would still continue to go the way that they were going. It just seems to me that it's the first thing they go for. It's the obvious thing to go for. And football fans suffer. Now, this isn't me saying that there doesn't have to be some level of restriction. There doesn't have to be, you know, changes. I get the situation out there. And And I get boosted last night. You know, I understand what we need to do and things like that. But it's just automatic when it comes to football. And I think that, you know, it's the first thing that enters their heads, and it's just easy. I'll leave it there for a second, and I'll let maybe yous come in with your thoughts. But you knew the minute they were talking about restrictions, the very first thing they would go for would be football matches. And in a blanket manner, as you said, there's no proportionality to it. There's no understanding of, you know, the physical distancing that you can have within, you know, stadiums like Celtic Park or size. It's just 500 fans, cheerio, boom. And it's just a bit of a signal.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we do have to accept that probably some restrictions were going to come in place, but I think the how proportional these things are from club to club and things like that, it just seems way out of whack. I mean, you're talking about the game, we're obviously going to touch on the St Mirren game because it looks as if the St Mirren game will happen on Wednesday. But the, you know, 4 days later, you know, you could have 60,000 if the game is at Celtic Park. You could have 60,000 fans against St Mirren on a Wednesday, but 4 days later, it's suddenly too dangerous, and you have to have 500. They've also, you know, basically they're saying that 200 indoor, if an indoor sport was taking place, 200 spectators indoors is as dangerous as 500 supporters outdoors. You also had Jason Leach, saying ahead of the weekend's cup final, which we will get to, that he wasn't worried about the fans outside in the stand because it's cold, virus doesn't spread below a certain temperature, it's more getting to the games and things like that. Gal, it just, when you know for a fact that people say this game on the 2nd of January was to go ahead, that if people aren't going to get to go to Celtic Park and watch the game, they're going to be in houses watching it, they're going to try and get to pubs and watch it. I am very frustrated by it, and you can understand why other people would be. If you get any different opinion to that?
To be honest, not really. The point about proportional response, I think, is really quite important. And the point about folks in houses, like, so you've got 60,000 people who would go to Celtic Park. Those 60,000 people are just going to go around to their pal's house, and so are all the other people that, you know, the obviously the away support being, you know, everyone else in the country. It just seems that it's, look, this virus isn't, we're not making any jokes, or, you know, we're not frustrated. We're not
playing it.
No, we're not like the Vuruka Salt where we're sitting and we're saying, we want our football and that's it. We understand the gravity of the situation, but it's about how things are responded to, the timing of things, and just a regulation of what's happening just doesn't seem to be there, from, in my opinion, you know. And as Sormani says, it's always the football fans, straight off the bat, always the football fans. You've got John Swinney turning around saying that, I just want to, some quotes here, essentially has warned last week's League Cup final between Celtic and Rangers could have been a super spreader. Not is a super spreader, or here's the science to say it was a super spreader. Could be a super spreader. It could well be. Like, you know, the fact of the matter is there was a whole card of Premier League games last season other than ones that couldn't go. But like, 50,000 went to Ibrox. You know, the games, Hearts were playing, Aberdeen. Like, why is the League Cup final the kind of focus on this? I just find it all really, really bizarre. To use phrase a politician in the time of a pandemic saying that might have been bad, but we'll never know. It's like, well, you know what? We probably will know, because you can you know, track and trace. You know, we can see. It's just the misinformation and the use of, in my view, some of that is politicising a pandemic, and I think it's pathetic.
And going back to the point I made about it being too easy, it's because it's the big events, and especially as we're playing Rangers in the 2nd, that is viewed as a big game, traditional, you know, New Year game. So it's easy to make a political point about it. But I don't think that you could underestimate the fact that pubs aren't going to be closed.
Nope.
Now, unless something happens between now and then, right? And I don't think they will be closed. And the reason they won't be closed is because there's not going to be any finance made available for the furlough scheme and anything like that. And as much as, you know, there's there might be some appetite for the Scottish government to do something about pubs. They're not going to do it, right? So you've now got a situation where 60,000 fans would be sitting in an environment that, generally speaking, your man Leach, as you said, Louis, last week, said is safe, it's open-aired, you know, cold, and they're now going to be, you know, crammed into people's houses, crammed into pubs, crammed into, you know, whatever, to watch the game. I mean, it's... And I think one of the justifications was, you know, well, we don't want this to happen, or we don't want that to happen, so that people, you know, don't go to the pubs after it as well. But it's self-defeating, it's daft. You know people are going to do that. People are going to go and watch this game, and socially, the way that they've always done, the only thing that's not going to happen is the bit that's probably the most safe. So suppose it's about... The thing that irks me is that there's restrictions in society because of what's happening. It's because of sometimes the easy wins, you know, the easy reaches, and it's always football fans.
Yeah.
Stadiums could, you know... on you go.
It's all about aesthetics, really, isn't it? I mean, it's how it looks. There's 60,000 people in the one place. Aesthetically, to people who are not interested in football, not interested in sport, they will very quickly turn around and say, how can you have 60,000 people in the one place? Regardless of the fact that it's open air, what Jason Leach was saying about the temperature and things like that will not be taken into consideration. It's 60,000 yobs in a stadium watching football, and that can't be allowed. But it's the contradictions, and we're not getting into the whole wider debate about COVID restrictions, of course, and things like that. But I mean, the contradictions are just all over the place. I mean, I know it from my job. We've been, everybody else, if someone in your household tests positive, the whole household is to isolate for 10 days, right? If you're a teacher, though, you can volunteer to not isolate and come out of isolation and go to work. You know, it's like there's contradictions all over the fucking shire, and it just sticks in your throat.
Listen, I'm going to have to just jump in there so that you're not boo-hooing and saying that that's rules specifically for teachers. No, that is applied to a number of key workers, including social care staff and health workers. So you're in with that gang, Louis, but it's not,
yes, I am.
It's all about you guys. It's not all about you guys, you know. There's other workers, and by the way, it's voluntary.
By the way, can I just say, see, us podcasters, we're having a hell of a time as well. It's awful. I mean, I spend 95% of my time in the house anyway, but, you know, still.
I couldn't resist a chance to jump in on you earlier, obviously, but you're absolutely correct about the contradictions and things like that. They've been evident throughout the entire thing.
Whole thing.
But when you can see them, people are tired. And again, to reiterate, there is nobody here in this recording who's saying that there doesn't need to be some action taken. But aesthetics is a good word, Louis, isn't it? It's let's go for the first thing that makes us look like we're being hard and tough in this. And everybody could have predicted that a mile away. And it just doesn't sit right.
See, the thing is, sorry to jump in, Louis, but so essentially the chief scientist for, you know, Mr. Leach has basically said, I don't have a problem when the fans are in the stadium. I don't have a problem with that. Because, as you guys said, it's Scottish winter, it's cold, the transmission's really low, if at all, if everyone's wearing masks, etc., etc. So, what you need to do is say, right, okay, so that's not a problem getting... So the issue is getting to the stadium. Is there a thing we could do? So, instead of just being like, ah, it's all done, could it not be, let's think this through, let's try and... work a solution that works for everybody in every situation. Because as you guys say, everyone's just going to cram into a boozer and everyone's going to go out to their pal's house. The transmission will end up being worse because people are like, well, I'm just going to go to my pal's house as opposed to go to the stadium. Is there not some way you can sit down and think, well, let's try and figure some stuff out? But they don't. It's just, as Sir Manny said, and as you say, Louis, with you know, aesthetics, closed door, first thing out the window, done.
I mean, is there restrictions being put on buses, public transport, trains, or are all the seats available? You can sit in whatever one you want.
It's also a good point.
If the problem's transport, getting fans to places, then, you know, I can go on a public train and you know. The
good point. You're sharp, Louis. You're sharp.
Well, you know. Not as sharp as Armani, obviously, the fucking smart ass. But anyway, he just Googles picket lines. St Mirren have requested to...
I'm going to let that one go. I'm sick of ragdolling you, wee man.
We know you're a frontline man, don't worry. St Mirren have requested to postpone the game against us tomorrow, but I think, obviously, so far, I think the SPFL have come out with a statement, Gal.
Yeah, so St Mirren came out with a statement today, they released it on our website and on Twitter. St Mirren Football Club can confirm that it has requested postponements of our upcoming cinch Premiership matches against Celtic and Rangers following further positive COVID tests. We're in continued discussion with the SPFL as we look for a resolution in this matter. So that was about, you know, 1 o'clock to, or just after the announcement, so like 3 o'clock, half three. And then very recently, within the last sort of hour or two, it's understood the number, St Mirren have been told Celtic and Rangers games must go ahead as the SPFL boots out postponement requests. So, under emergency SPFL rules, games must go ahead as scheduled if any stricken club still has enough manpower at its disposal to draw from a squad of 13 outfield players and a goalkeeper. But this all is all dependent on negative PCR tests coming back from the lab on Wednesday morning. So it's on at the moment, but any negative PCR tests tomorrow morning will mean that it'll be cancelled.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at least it's just a trip to Paisley. It could have been worse, you know, if fans were going to have to leave earlier, but let's hope that decision's made well in advance of kickoff. Celtic have responded, Gal, I don't know if you've got that there, about they released a statement and to kind of put their point across about bringing forward the winter break.
Yeah, so Celtic released a statement as well saying, everyone at Celtic recognises the difficulties presented to society by the current pandemic and the health and safety of all must always be our priority. In light of today's announcement regarding supporters attending matches, Celtic can confirm that it has today requested that the SPFL bring forward the scheduled winter break and reschedule the fixtures affected by the regulations announced. So that's basically from Boxing Day onwards. The game owes it to supporters to explore all opportunities to maximise the prospect of all supporters being able to attend matches and support the game they love. So Celtic have come out. It's been confirmed that Hibs have came out with pretty much the same stance.
Motherwell
have come out as well. Cool. I seen one report that basically said that the only team who haven't done it are them, but it was just a wee guy on Twitter. But I believe it.
He's probably
some wee guy on Twitter. He had like 50 followers, but you know, I still believe it.
It's Samania, you know, let's be honest, let's quit a bullshit. One of the first things we thought when we saw this announcement was, this is good for them, or how could it be good for us? It's all about the title race, it's all about that game on the 2nd of January. As it stands just now, games going ahead with a, you know, pretty much nobody there, 500 fans. It's obviously the game is at Celtic Park. There was no going to be any Rangers fans at the game anyway. If the game goes ahead with those reduced numbers, it's an advantage to them, you would say, on paper. If we get the winter break, it's an advantage to us to postpone it. Injuries, transfers, all of that stuff. Is it as clear-cut as that for you?
I mean, if you're starting to dig down into the sporting advantage and talk about that, then you would perceive it that way. Well, I know that the supporters would perceive it that way, but it just makes sense in terms of the fact that in 2 weeks, there's going to be a winter lockdown anyway. You know, there's a winter break consistently in Scotland. Bring that forward would make sense in terms of A, you know, stopping the, you know, the transmission of whatever, it would stop games happening behind closed doors. And they're talking about this being 3 weeks. Okay, but don't laugh at the back. People always do that, obviously, when they announce these things, they go on longer than they do. But if that's what they're saying, you've got to assume or you've got to hope that a short, sharp break would allow things to, you know, games to be played later on in January when the situation might be different. Now, it might not, but it makes sense to kind of take that opportunity and try and do that just now, I would say. And if they are talking about the prevalence of the virus and the spread of it and things like that, postponing the Celtic Rangers game on the second would stop all those people going to the pub, if that's what they really wanted to, that's if that's what they're talking about and things like that. So there are plenty of arguments for it, but as we know, there are arguments about perceived advantage and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I don't think you're going to get uniformity in this, but personally, I think it makes perfect sense.
There's going to be talks, I think there's talks going to be happening tonight with the league and things like that, Gil. Obviously, Sky are going to have a major kind of role to play in all of this, because they could quite easily turn around and demand that they, you know, from their point of view, that the matches go ahead, because they want them televised, whether there's fans there or not. The club also have they're probably in uncomfortable territory here, because we all know the added value didn't happen. Now, you guys had season tickets. You didn't get to go. You all paid your money, and you were given promised things you weren't given, and you were given Celtic TV. It was shit. And you were out of pocket. You know, what do you think the club should be thinking at this point? Because obviously they're pushing to have the winter break happen. If they don't, can you see, because I saw some people today, I had talking to people in work about it and seen people on Twitter, people saying, I want my fucking money back. If I'm not going to get to the game, I want my money back. You know, I want some sort of refund on my tickets. Can you see that? Do you think the club have to be careful how they play this?
So a couple of things. Firstly, obviously I'm in charge of the Cynic, at 90 Minutes Cynic Twitter account. So I was just kind of scrolling through, and like almost instantly Livingston were like, oh, if you've bought tickets, this is how we're going to respond. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to take care of it. And I just thought that was really good. I actually thought Celtic's statement was good. So I'm kind of going to let the club off the hook just now for that. But in regards to if it goes... So there's two points, there's two ways of thinking. So Manny just really made me think of something. The safest thing to do is to make sure that the game, the winter break happens sooner. Because if you don't do that, people will go to the pub. People will go outside the stadium. People will march through town. That's what people will do. If you postpone it, or if you bring in the winter break earlier, after Boxing Day, that won't happen. So actually, from a real public safety point of view, postponing is the only viable option at this point, because 500 people in the stadium doesn't mean that 500, that doesn't mean that 20,000 people can't stand around the stadium and chant and cheer. And the support that we have, we are rabid for success, we are rabid to support our team, and that's what a lot, you'd be outside though. So again, kind of, it's all these kind of contradictions. But in regard to what the club do, the club, I've got, I bought my wife a ticket to the Hibs game, and I've got a season ticket where I sit in a section that means that their support where they sit. So I had to pay £50 for a ticket. So the club owe me £80 if nothing goes ahead. Now, will I get that £80? Bloody better. But the club, I'm sure if things are postponed, we'll just say, look, we're going to postpone them, so when those games come around, you can have the tickets then. But there's a lot of people who, Mark Braceland is part of the Cynic, Stuart 96, Big Stu, he's in a part of the Cynic.co, he's in the Discord, he's over from America. You know, they need to get refunded because they're not going to be able to play. But I'm sure that the club will figure all that out, because they have to, because they've had practice in fucking up in the past. Don't get me wrong, I still, to this day, do not trust any of those people in that boardroom, but they can't keep fucking us over. So I'd imagine they'd have all that light. I know.
I'd get the Vaseline out. I think you're going to get shafted again, to be honest with you.
I just want to say, though, the SFA-SPFL joint response group released a statement today, not even that long ago, basically just saying joint response group will be holding a series of consultations about the impact of the new restrictions over the next 24 hours. And then it's just, we're going to do lateral flows, and you know, we can understand stuff. It's a lot of words without actually saying anything, but we're led to believe there's Zoom calls happening as and when, as now. So just don't trust anybody anymore, honestly.
Well, speaking of not trusting people, That brings us to one absolute fucking cretin, who will not be nowhere near Celtic Park, luckily. Former police commander, Bernard Fanny Higgins, has confirmed through another source, but it was all that he will not be joining Celtic with basically the fan protests have hopefully played. I think it's pretty clear to everybody that the fans' protests have shone a spotlight on it, have made the difference, despite what you might have thought about the tennis balls on the pitch and the, you know, remaining silent and things like that in the ground. It has brought a spotlight to it. It has contributed to this man not being anywhere near Celtic Park, and it's terrific news, Somani, for fan power, essentially.
Yeah, it's the result that matters, and that he's not going to be appointed by the club is really what matters at the end of the day. The question is whether or not he decided he couldn't be bothered with the hassle, or whether the board listened to the fans. That's maybe a question for another day. But ultimately, he's not going to be appointed. That's what the protests set out to do. So, great news. A result, as you say, for fan power. And, you know, it puts that to bed as well. You know, everybody wants to concentrate and support the team. See all that shite about, you know, calling out certain fan groups for not doing certain things and stuff like that. You know, they did that because, you know, they wanted to shine a light on it. Everybody wants to get back to supporting the team. You know, I think they were right to do what they did. I didn't think the criticism was valid. But ultimately now, he's not getting appointed and everybody can get back to doing what they want to do, which is support the team from the pub, clearly, mind you. But that's a result. That's the way we need to look at it.
Yeah, Cal, I think the major kind of red flag, I suppose, is the fact that we had to find this out through the tabloids. It was not released, you know, there was no statement by the club. The club didn't take ownership of it. I mean, it could have been an easy win for the club. You know, the club could have came out and said, you know, basically what he said, you know, considering recent speculation or regarding recent speculation, we're no hiring this guy. Maybe that's not how PLCs work. I'm not sure. Maybe Martin Friel would give us a more of an insight into that. But we didn't hear about it from the club. We heard it through the tabloids. That sticks in the throat. But ultimately, as Somani says, just fucking good to move on for this dick.
The power of the people is much stronger than the people in power. That's a fact.
He wrote that down. He's read that off a bit of paper.
Fuck up.
Off the autocue. Inspirationalquotes.com. he's sorting a meme.
Fuck up. I actually tweeted it from the official. Don't get me wrong. I did read it down because I always fuck things up. But no, I mean, see, ultimately.
Beautiful.
The thing is, though, it's the ultimate goal has been earned, and I can't, you know, doff my hat enough to the supporters groups and the podcasters and the fans and the supporter buses and the supporter associations and everyone who just took time to write a letter or to put out a statement or to just basically say, no, this isn't happening. You know, power, there is power in, you know, unity and being together. And I think we all just, it worked. And the thing about any sort of protest is it has to be, Somani will tell you, everything, any sort of protest has to be disruptive, because if it's not, then it has less power and it has less kind of importance. And the fact the tennis balls were brilliant, a very innovative way, and, you know, being silent in Celtic Park from like the Green Brigade and stuff, I thought was, and the boys as well, I thought was just really, just a really great way of highlighting this issue. And the fact of the matter is, the club have not in any way from start to finish covered themselves in any sort of fucking glory. They do not deserve a piece of any sort of, oh well, the club listened. Did they fuck? The club have bowed to pressure. There's a massive difference between making the right decision and bowing to pressure. And that's all I'll say on that, because I want to just everyone to know that the club deserve no credit for this. The board deserve no credit for this. Oh, they listened. Did they fuck? They get found out and fuck them. There you go.
An angry man. See, earlier when he said he better get a refund for his tickets. I was going to ask him what he was going to do, but it sounded quite hard there, Louis. So
I'll walk up to the ticket office. I'll walk up to the ticket office and I'll knock four times, and then if there's no answers, then I'll leave.
He'll be tooled up. So let's get to the football finally, man. The news section. Oh, Jesus, that's draining. Let's get to the football. We've got a lot to discuss. We've got great times to talk about. We've won the League Cup. We've got a trophy in the bag. One out of three down. Two more to go. It's only a matter of time. Christopher Gallagher, you've not been on a big time podcast yet this week. Tell us your thoughts on the game and the result.
So I was at the game, and I was the whole day, the whole morning, I was really, really, really nervous. Really nervous. It felt like, I don't know, it was a feeling I've never had before. In that there's been plenty of cup finals, but every cup final I've been to before, there's always been that sort of level of, we'll have enough to see, each, you know, we'll have enough to get through. And, you know, usually it's with a manager that's had more time, or he's got the players that he wants, or, you know, it's, there was something really special and slash scary about this cup final. But getting to the stadium, walking in and seeing the support, feeling the atmosphere, just even the way I skip ahead, but like the adversity that we had when we conceded first and the quick response and the character shown, like this, the whole game could have been like a Hollywood film. You know, Ange Postecoglou's first final, and it was, if you look at like, and when you're writing a script for a film, you need to have certain, you know, kind of points where the action happens, and you know, there's the three act structure. And this game had like the three act structure where the hero comes out, then there's adversity, the hero gets over the adversity, and the hero eventually wins. And that's essentially what it was. It was like perfectly written in the stars. Was I close to tears? Yes. Did I cry? A little bit. I'm sure we all kind of did. I'm sure we all had a tear. There was just something so special about Sunday, and I can't wait to relive those. That's the biggest thing about not seeing Celtic over this period. It's Christmas time, no Celtic. After that Sunday is just devastating. But Sunday itself was magnificent.
See, just before we get some Annie's thoughts, just when you mentioned the atmosphere there, is it just me, and it might just be me, I don't know, but I've never liked Hampden when I've been there. I've been there for cup finals myself. I've never liked that stadium for atmosphere. It feels like the atmosphere at Hampden's getting better. It felt at the weekend like it was coming through the telly anyway. It looked great. Do you think there's been any change in recent times at Hampden?
I think it's to do with the fact that we have, you know, we went from having a record that was turgid for a while, for a you know, a period where losing cup finals, you know, Kilmarnock and such, losing semi-finals, St Mirren, you know, Inverness and all that, to just an unparalleled series of just success, of course. But what's perfect about Celtic as a support and as a football club is when you sprinkle on a little bit of adversity, it just really lifts the entire support. And that's what, I thought the semi-final was like that. I thought the final was like that. Just this, sprinkle on a little bit of adversity, sprinkle on a little bit of doubt from other people, and we come together and just, but has Hampden improved? I think the Scotland games have shown you that if, you know, if everyone's kind of at it, you can get something from that stadium. Because you're right, I think it's a shite stadium. There's no doubt.
Yeah. So, Manny, we were obviously on the reaction number one, the greatest reaction of the day, of course. No. Poor shade on the other one. I listened to that as well. It was very good, to be fair. But yeah, we kind of, it was a kind of emotional one. We were both, all three of us, Paul Carlin included, we were all pretty emotional after the game, and there was lots of things that kind of stirred those emotions during and after the game. The main thing for me was about how the humility of it and how the connection I felt to that manager and that squad of players. You know, we spoke about it at the time, and it was one of my 2-point takeaways, the fact that they just seem more humble, they seem more relatable, those players in the squad. And thinking about it in the last couple of days, I think it's because there's not as many background stories concerning them. There's no want-away players. There's no players that have down tools and desperate to leave, or players who are constantly linked with the next move. And I've kind of... no overstayed their welcome, but you know that they're at the end of their time with Celtic. Everything's fresh, everything's new, they're hungry, they want to be there. The manager wants to be there, he's not treating you with utter disdain. It's even now, the you know, days on from it, I still feel that even more. When I watch things or I listen to Ange and things like that, I just feel such a connection to this squad of players and this management team that it just feels like we've not had it in so long. And even though it was 1 year of utter terrible, chaotic, you know, a chaotic situation with that idiot, it was just so nice. And that is the big thing for me that, again, I think is just, it's been compounded for me in the last few days. How do you feel a few days on from the whole thing?
Well, I mean, see, to go back a wee bit, last season, I don't think you can underestimate the effect that had on us as a support. I mean, there was that was a ritual humiliation last season, and that's not just from them. That's from the way that the club conducted themselves, the manager conducted themselves, and the way that we performed on the park. You know, everything that could have went wrong last season went wrong, and it was, you know, behind closed doors as well, so that we, you know, we know why we don't want to go back there, not, you know, for a million reasons. So it was almost like a reset button when this season came in. And you're right, the point you make, I seen that wee clip with Ryan Christie. Tom English was interviewing him. I seen that earlier on, and he's talking about how hard it was for him last season and how he's now in Bournemouth. See, at the start of the season, Ange went, if you want to stay, you can stay. Yeah, I remember him saying it. We've made him an offer. If Ryan wants to be part of this, you know, that's fine. Do that. If you don't, go. And that's it. He went. So now it's almost like that line was drawn. If you want to be at this football club, be at this football club. And from there on in, it's not been plain sailing. It's not been smooth. We're not where we want to be. But you've got a manager who is trying to instill an ethos into the side. You've got a group of players who want to be there. You've got players from last season who've stepped up to the mark that they previously set and beyond. Tom Rogic, as we talked about in the reaction, as I said, Tom Rogic is playing the best football of his Celtic career, and I include anything under that in that. Yeah, okay. You know, and that is why I think that it meant so much. And let's be honest as well. We can admit this now. We're a bit spoiled. You know, we would go to cup finals or we would win league titles and we would spill down. You would see fans spilling down the stairs, you know, before they'd done a lap of honour and things like that. And I seen a wee bit of criticism on Twitter from Hibs fans talking about how these things don't mean as much to us as they would to fans of their club. And you could maybe say that about some of the trophies we've won over the last 10 years. You could possibly say that. Not this one, though. This one was, you know, after being battered and bruised and coming through what happened last season, coming through a period where not only was the manager written off by large sections of the media, a lot of the fans weren't sure about him either. And, you know, that's because they didn't know where he came from. I think the media do that, and they did that with Venglos, and they've done that in the past. They do that as a kind of nasty way, but I think the fan base obviously automatically go, I don't know anything about this guy, and immediately have their doubts. So you coming from that background to what, 5 months later, he's only been in the job 5 months and he's won his first trophy. There was an outpouring of emotion. I'm not afraid to admit that I had a tear in my eye either, and I'm sure that I wasn't alone. And for me, it was massive, really massive.
As you say, it was emotional. We have been battered and bruised. It meant more than a trophy has. It feels like a trophy has ever felt. We aside, but did we go and smash up the city centre? Did we go and fucking, you know, cause it everywhere we went? No, we didn't. And we celebrated ourselves at home, things like that, went to the pub, had a good time, celebrated the win. Dignity. We know we had a bit of dignity about us, a bit of class about us. No let them. Scum. And I don't think enough is made of that, you know, in the media and things like that. They're very, very quick to...
Don't you count your chickens about fan violence when you heard Mr. Gallagher earlier on? He's going to do.
Oh, no, that's just that's just starting a revolution, my friend. That's a very good point, Louis. Genuinely. We won a trophy that... the first trophy we've won since everything went to hell. Like, last season... I'm preaching to the converted. You all know what last season was and how bad it felt, but it's really hard to quantify where we all went mentally and where we all went from a spiritual point of view, really doubting everything about the club, from the board to the players on the pitch to the manager to literally other fans. Like, we kind of, in a way, weirdly lost our identity as a support. And it's slowly but surely been stitched together by Ange Postecoglou, who is a guy that we really didn't know anything about before he was linked. I remember being in the pub with my father on Rutherglen Main Street, and I got a text message saying, Eddie Howe's not happening. And then I saw the tweet from Celtic. I said to my dad, and he looked at me and I'm like, what the fuck are we going to do now? And then an hour later, who the fuck is Ange Postecoglou? And now we have this guy who literally is stitching the fabric of the club back together by hand. It's taking time, because it always takes time. I think what the guy's done legitimately is pretty incredible. Now, we all still have, there's still a little bit of doubt in the back of our head. Of course there is. There's always going to be a little bit of doubt. But, and I wanted to bring this up when you mentioned Ryan Christie. Character. See Ryan Christie. If Ryan Christie wanted to go, he wanted to leave Celtic, that's fine. Look, hey, whatever you want to do. But it takes more character to stay here and to build something from the ground up than it does to go to Bournemouth and get promotion, which they might not even do. I look at a guy like Callum McGregor, and I look like, you know, the doubts I had, no question, the doubts I had at the end of last season when I thought, no, he doesn't have it. I don't think he's got the, I don't think he's got captain material about him. I don't think he's got the pragmatism. I don't think he's got, he's not got enough. Look at him now. Look at that guy. Look at David Turnbull, a guy who we've criticised up and down, and, you know, it's been a ride, but character. Tom Rogic pulling his career, dragging it up, like pulling it out of nowhere, making sure that actually, do you know what, I'm going to run a little bit faster, I'm going to run a little bit harder, I'm going to do it because this guy believes in me. And a guy like Ryan Christie taking the first train out of town to go to the Championship, I've seen him for Scotland. I'm a massive Scotland fan. The guy doesn't have it. The guy's got no. There's nothing. There's no.
I'm already put off. We've spoke about this tip for too long.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right.
I think you've got some of this rips my knitting a bit, Ange, I must say, but I was all for it. I was. All ears for it at the weekend. He likes to make, every time he speaks to the media, he likes to recite a poem that he's just come up with the night before. Now, can you give us some of the audio, Christopher Gallagher?
Yes, sir.
The second one, we're real annoyed at.
Oh, that's poem again.
he does say, no, what a fucking poem is.
Oh, my God. Listen, hold on a second. Listen to his voice.
The second one, we're...
Aye, very good. Right, okay, here we go.
Go on,
Lee.
See what he says about John being inept, the referee. See when he used that word, inept, I don't think he was sure what it meant. he didn't commit to the word at all. And then when he was called on it, inept, he went, aye. Mm-hmm.
Aye.
That's what I said. I'll do.
Here we go. Here's the leader of the Celtic.
How is this feeling at the moment? It must be really emotional for you.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, obviously, I know the significance of it, and it's been a hell of a ride so far, you know, and we haven't come into this opportunity the easy way, and I'm just so proud of this group of players, you know. They've been the most resilient group I've ever come across with what's been thrown at us the last 5 or 6 months, and super pleased they get the rewards.
Does it feel as if it takes a little bit of pressure off your shoulders when you win the first trophy that you can win?
Nah, mate, it's not pressure. It's what I want, you know.
Sorry, I just love the way he goes, nah, mate. Come on, mate. Oh.
It's why you accept this position. You don't accept this position to sort of shy away from creating special things. And, you know, we're still at the beginnings. And you know, we want to enjoy this because, as I said, this group of players has been through an awful lot and yet risen to every challenge, including today. And, you know, we just want to keep going.
You didn't have too much time to be worried about Hibs going ahead because you equalised immediately.
Yeah, well, it was the first time I got in our box. You know, I said please and they scored. And I thought we were really comfortable up until then. But as you said, perfect response and yeah, great way to get back in the game.
Kyogo just keeps on delivering the goods, doesn't he?
Well, he's a brilliant player, but he's a great person too, you know, and he was just determined, even on one leg, to get out there today and help the boys out, you know.
Great to have fans inside today for this cup final, and the atmosphere, something special, wasn't it?
It's everything, mate, because, you know, it's what this football club's about. It's what football's about, you know. As I said, we just pass through these clubs, but the people in here, it's generational support. They've invested their lives, their kids' lives in this football club, and these are the rewards, and we want to give it to them.
Does this feel like it's just the start for you, and you want more success, more trophies?
It has to be. It's the only measure at Celtic that, you know.
And I just can't see.
You win it, and then you go on to the next one.
Ah, fucking bright. Sorry, well, on you go.
It's I mean, as I say, it was poetic. It was brilliant what he was saying. You know, the generational support line he's trotted out a few times, but it's absolutely spot on. It's correct, and it's great to hear the manager recognise that, treat us with a bit of respect. It goes a long way considering what we had to deal with last year.
Tommy Burns-esque. It evokes that, and Burns came from a completely different position, being one of us. But I think from that you get the fact that Ange understands the community nature, the working class nature of what a football club is, and recognises that. So, those words are, I enjoy hearing them when he speaks like that.
It seems genuine. Like, you listen to it and you're like, this isn't a gimmick. This isn't him trying to, like, you know, just trying to be something he's not, you know,
he's not going to get his teeth done, leave his wife, and do a Brendan, is that what you're saying?
I didn't say any of that.
So I start doing boxing montages on social media and things.
You're right, he does. He's, even though with Rodgers at the start, you bought into all these bullshit, you know what I mean? But even, you know, and then subsequently when he left, you realise that, you know, that won't happen with Ange. You know that won't happen.
See if it does, but he will be a rat and we'll have a segment on our last, so don't fucking worry about it. Ange, the rat. So, listen, on Ange, Somani, you know, I don't think it wasn't probably talked about enough at the time. We didn't really focus on it too much on our reaction, but if you look at the wider context of what Ange walked into and the point now in December, we've won the first trophy on offer in Scottish football, it is absolutely remarkable. I mean, we all speculated about needing pretty much a whole new starting 11, whole new team. We did sign, 12 players in the summer. Not all of them have worked out, of course. But the odds were stacked against us. We had a new CEO. The CEO left. We were all basically dominating this podcast talking about bigger, wider, deeper issues like the structure of the club, football director, all of these sorts of things. We've kind of moved away from that, and we always knew that a bit of success would maybe dampen that focus a wee bit, not that it's not still important to us, but from a purely playing point of view, to put a team together, to come through all the adversity, to deal with all the injuries, to have an identity again as a football team, and to win the first fucking trophy on offer, it is a huge way to come from what he inherited in the summer, isn't it?
It's massive in terms of what we've done in that period of time with the squad we've got. Now, part of the reason that's happened is some of the players, the important players we had, aren't as bad as we said they were last season. Cal McGregor, Tom Rodgick, you know, these guys have elevated themselves from the depths of last season to almost certainly above where they've ever performed for us. So that, I think you need to acknowledge that we still had some very good players in the squad, and he's managed to get the best out of them when another manager didn't. But in terms of the squad, even as it is just now, it's still threadbare.
Yeah.
And he's managed to eke so much out of it. You know, we're recording this on the 21st, right? Who knows what's going to happen fucking the next few days, right? But assuming that we've got the games coming up before we go into the Rangers game in the second, we've got three games, right? Theoretically, we could drop points in those games. Wouldn't be that surprising, really. You know, but I think now after Sunday, there's almost an understanding of the direction of travel. Now, if we lose all three, okay, people will start to change their mind. But the point I'm making is if we slip up, you know, I think when we've slipped up before, and I'm as guilty as other people, and I imagine people on here are guilty as well, we immediately go, this isn't good enough, and we start to dissect it too much. You know, I think if we slip up, we'll obviously be disappointed in the context of the title race, but I don't think anybody's going to start saying, you know, pointing the finger or questioning the manager. And I think that's because of what he's done so far, and he cemented all that on Sunday. So what he's done is absolutely remarkable, and I think people are now just happy to be on the Ange. What mode of transport starts with an A?
Automobile.
Automobile.
Gal, I think some Annie is a point that I actually thought about myself as well, and it does sound ridiculous, but if we did drop points against the likes of St Mirren, for example, or something like, obviously the game in the second is obviously different, but if we did drop points against St Mirren or St Johnson, I wouldn't lose my shit. I wouldn't throw my toys at the pram, because as Somani says, I know where we're going, I know we're on a good thing, I know good times are going to come, and there's a kind of certainty. It feels like there is as much of a certainty as you can get in football that we are going to get better than where we currently are, and right now we're capable of winning trophies. It's a good feeling to have.
Yeah, I mean, David Turnbull came off the pitch in the League Cup final. You know, his personal response was, you know, heartbreaking, and you know how much it meant to him. But afterwards, Ange basically said, David Turnbull came off the pitch because he's playing too much football. David Turnbull's playing too much football because Ange Postecoglou is, you know, we've Sir Manny kind of had a comparison with him to Tommy Burns, and I think it's a really interesting, and I never really thought about that, but very true how Tommy Burns used to speak about the support and the club as a whole. Is, you know, Ange is doing that, and he's not trying to impersonate Tommy Burns, but it just so happens that their how they speak and their beliefs and the working class ethos and all that kind of marries up. It's just he's his own man, but there's similarities there. When it comes to managing a squad, he does a Martin O'Neill where he doesn't trust players, and he's very, very unlikely to bring. So, for example, the Betis game, wholesale changes. Liam Shaw comes in, Urigidi comes in, all these guys, and you think, oh, he's given them a chance. How many of them have had a chance since, and how many of them will have a chance afterwards? It's unlikely they will. My point being, he's got a squad of players maybe 15, 14, 15. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have wanted to have brought on Scales, and he wouldn't have wanted to bring on Montgomery. And he wouldn't have wanted to bring on Moffat, not because he necessarily doesn't rate them. I just don't think he maybe thinks it's their time yet. But the point being, he's a guy who manages a squad of 14, 15, and to have done what he's done with so little options is absolutely remarkable. It's incredible. It really is. sensational. The fact that we're 4 points behind after such a sticky start, and the fact that we're in the next, we're in the Europa Conference League, we've got a winnable tie, and the fact that, you know, we've won our first trophy. The guy's doing a hell of a job, and as you've both have said, you know, if points are dropped in the next, you know, five or six games out with the Rangers game, because we need to win that, but like, if points are dropped, I think he's earned it. He's earned the right.
Got the goodwill. Yeah.
He's earned the right for us to go, Ange knows what he's doing, and sometimes in football things don't happen, which is very, very different from last season, where the guy wouldn't look us in the eye. The last manager at the very end wouldn't even look us in the eye. It's chalk and cheese. So what he's done is remarkable. What his resources that he's used have been minuscule. So what I would say is, you know, a full Ange squad taking on this league, I think, is a completely different kettle of fish.
We on the Cynic Weekly, obviously, the Cynic.co, we have reactions to every game, and we go through it kind of in depth about the key moments of the game and what happens and things like that. We don't really do that on the Cynic Weekly. We're more looking at the talking points that you're maybe still talking about a few days after. So one thing before we move on to the St Mirren game, I wanted to talk about, and to keep things as positive as they can be, is Kyogo. Kyogo won us the game. He scores both of the goals, absolutely sensational. I must say, I did not fully appreciate the touch for that first goal. As I've watched it back hundreds of times since, and yeah, every few you see of it, obviously there's the smoke from the flares and things and fireworks. You can't totally see it, but it was absolutely sensational, and I wish we'd had the chance to maybe highlight that more in the reaction, so many. But again, we did speak about it. We compared him a lot to Henrik Larsson. We spoke about where he could go and things like that. But you look at that, those goals again and again on social media, and you just think he is the superstar. He just is the superstar of this team, and we have someone again that I think we can confidently rely on to turn up in the big moments.
And that's, I think I'd said that on Sunday. He went from being a very, very good football player to a big game winner. And you don't always get that. You get guys who, you know, will score goals for football clubs or create for football clubs, but at the big moments, they're maybe not always there. But that's the first game. Now, I mean, probably the only other game domestically was the first game against them, and he probably should have scored that day, you know, in terms of the chances he had. But this was the first game, and he's done it in Europe. He scored goals, scored it away in Alkmaar, he scored against Ferencvaros, so he's done that there. But this was a big game with a prize at the end of it, and he stepped up. I mean, and not the best thing about it, but one of the clear things about it was he wasn't in the game, and he wasn't fit. That was a stapled together Kyogo. You know, Ange said that he had one leg, basically. But when it mattered, he produced two phenomenal pieces of quality. The first touch is unbelievable, as is the finish, as is the second finish. But what was key about it, and what one thing that we've been highlighting in podcasts for the last few months, is he's making runs and nobody's pinging him. Well, Roderick and McGregor pinged them perfectly with those runs, both of them timed to absolute perfection, and it was absolutely magnificent. Long may it continue.
I must say, and I know it's kind of pointless comparing players, right? Kyogo's probably not going to get the goals tally of maybe Dembele and Edouard, right? Because he's got other attributes to his game which are maybe more key, and we have other players that chip in with goals. But see, from a technique point of view, Gal, for me, he is better than both. He's the best we've seen in a long time. That touch to do that, the awareness and ability to just judge that ball and put it over the keeper's head for the second goal. I mean, it's an absolute joy. It's astounding that we've, you know, Ange, all credit has to go to Ange. He identified him. He brought him in. He's totally his player. And we've got a player of exceptionally high quality and technical ability for not a hell of a lot of money.
I don't want to be the guy who's going to bring the tone down, but let's not, you know, Edward and Dembele did a lot of stuff. And, you know, I still think at this point, I would say at this point, Dembele, you get Larson, Larson's on a different level. Dembele's probably the benchmark of what you want your striker to be. Kyogo.
Different types of strikers. Though.
Different type of striker, right? So who's got the better technique? Kyogo or Dembele? Kyogo, right? Who's got the better physique? Dembele. We could match. We could sit and we could match.
Who's got the bigger muscles?
My point being, what we're only 6 months into this thing. Not even 6 months. What, 4 or 5 months into this thing? And in five months, Kyogo has excited us as a support. I don't. When was the last time you felt this excited about a player? I can't remember. I really can't, because
since Paddy Roberts.
Not since PR7. But what I'd say about Kyogo is the thing that really I find unbelievable is how explosive he is over 5 yards. It's not about how quick he is over 20. It's not about how he runs with the ball or his movement. It's how explosive he is. Because see that sort of 0 to 60 over 5 yards? Defenders don't know how to defend against that. If you start off slow and you outpace someone, they can understand, they can figure out how to mark you. They can figure out how to, you can watch videos and they can be like, okay, when he does this, you do this. But see that explosion, 0 to 60 over 5 yards, you can't defend against that. It's like the end of Akira when Tetsuo explodes over Neo Tokyo.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It works. There'll be
There'll be three people.
I love it. But in all seriousness, I think his first, this may be controversial, I think his first goal is better than the second goal. I think the second goal is unbelievable. I think the first goal is better. And I think it's to do with the touch and the finish.
Such a fucking hipster, aren't you?
No, because
the Strathbungle committee say that the first goal was better than the same.
Somebody in this call's got a Twitter account called Hipster Celtic.
It's not
exposing you on air.
100% it's Chris Bowd. 100%.
So we're going to move on. Kyogo's the greatest, of course. We're going to move on to the game tomorrow, because it is possibly going to be the last game we see of Celtic for a wee while. We're obviously coming up to, it's Christmas this week, it's Christmas on Saturday. The next time that, obviously the Boxing Day's on Sunday, but I don't know if we were going to have a Cynic Weekly, probably maybe not next week. I don't know. If the game against them was going ahead, then maybe we would. But let's focus on St Mirren just now, because we know that is most likely to take place. They are gubbed, obviously, with COVID. We talked earlier about how they had requested for the game not to happen and things like that. So they are going to be pretty decimated. Maybe a similar situation to what we saw with Dundee United against Rangers at the weekend.
I think it's worse. Yeah,
fucking good. I mean, not for them, but I mean, good. We are 7 points behind. Obviously, they don't play this midweek, but technically, we are 7 points behind. So, Manny, coming off of that game, injuries obviously to Turnbull, Kyogo himself not 100%. So maybe there's a decision to be made there. In light of St Mirren's situation, how do you think we approach this? Of course, we approach it from the point of view of we need to take all 3 points, but do we do similar to what we've done in the Betis game and make wholesale changes, or what? What do you think?
You can't do that. The manager wouldn't leave himself open to that level of criticism. Now, some changes, yes, you know, two or three. I think, though, you try and play. I mean, obviously, Starfelt's out, so you're going to have Welsh in. So that's one change, easy enough. I keep the back four the same way.
Which is probably a good thing. The big man needs a wee holiday, I think.
Well, he didn't have a great second half. But Taylor looks as if he's maybe out as well. So there's maybe a change there, right? But largely
Scales.
I know you seem to love Scales.
Oh, you Jesus keep that Christ back.
Gal, we'll save your thoughts on Liam Scales for another podcast. But aye, you keep that as intact as possible. I'm still playing as strong a team possibly as we can, you know, because see if they are really decimated with COVID. Hopefully, we do something that we've not done for a long, long time and put these games to bed early. See if you get 3-0 up or something like that in the first half. I mean, I remember games that were getting in 4-0 at half time. You know, I remember Forrest doing it up at St Johnstone. That's done then. You know, then you just start to take off your important players and play within yourself. So you've got to take advantage of the fact that they're maybe weaker if they're forced to play. I'm not going to comment on whether they should or not. That's not for this podcast. But ultimately, if that game goes ahead, you play the strongest team you can possibly put out, but hopefully end it very quickly so that you can take off guys like Cal McGregor and others.
Yeah, we obviously, as Somani says, our Starfelt can't make it. He's suspended. Obviously, Stephen Welsh is the obvious fit to come in there. Greg Taylor being out, just going by recent games, you would think it would be Liam Scales that would come in at left back. You have Juranovic right back. Carter Vickers obviously partnering Welsh. Midfield, Turnbull being out, Beaton came on. You were a big fan of Beaton, as I think most of us were at the weekend. He's came on to a game. He's doing well in midfield right now. So he would come in. Kyogo, I think Kyogo's a question mark. But obviously, you're maybe restricted. Could we see Abada playing up front again with maybe Moffat wide, rest Kyogo? Or would you, even if he's got one leg, just put him out again?
So we get two scenarios here. This is the last game. Either first scenario is this is the last game before the winter break, if that's voted for. Second point, the second scenario is this is one of four cup finals that we need to win, essentially, before we get to the winter break. So let's, it's always, you know, it's planning for, you know, worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is the next four games after the St Mirren game, the three games after that are behind closed doors or 500 people or whatever. So you still have to play them. St Mirren weakened, but I'm very much of the Sormani school that you put out your strongest team and see what they could do. Now, I don't think Scales will play even if Greg Taylor's unavailable, because I think that Ange wants to give the Bricky, the Holy Bricky, Ralston, as much opportunity as he can, but he also wants to play Juranovic at right back. So if there's an opportunity to play Juranovic at left back and play Ralston at right back, I think he'll do that. And I think that's what tomorrow is, if Taylor's out. So I don't think Scales will play. I don't think Scales is a bad player. I just don't think he's good enough at Celtic's level. I thought against the Ross County game, I thought, you know, he had some nice touches. I know Louis smashed his head into the thing. I don't know what you see in him.
Young Irishman trying to play for Celtic. What's your fucking problem?
There's a couple of names I could throw out there, pal, that would, Jesus, throw that a bit right back in your face. I just don't think that, I don't want him to start over Juranovic at left back, put it that way. Juranovic at left back, Ralston at right back. Stephen Welsh, I think, has done really well when he's came in, so I don't have a problem with him coming in, partnering Carter Vickers. And yeah, you're right about Beaton. I thought Beaton was really good in the League Cup final. Myself and Sormani, I think, absolutely tore Beaton a new one after the Midtjylland home tie where he got sent off, where essentially we said we didn't want to see him play again and can they trust him and all this. And you know, I kind of still stand by that, but you know, needs must. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think there's anyone else. I don't want McCarthy starting in that position. I don't think he's at it. Beton's the best number six outside of McGregor we have. So with David Turnbull out, you have to play Beton, McGregor and Rogic. Up front, you know, if Kyogo's on bloody crutches and he's still eligible to play, I'd play him on crutches because he's still the best player in the league probably. Mikey Johnson and Abada.
Domani.
Beaton is playing because he has to play, and he's playing well. You know, again, and we're talking about Ange getting the best out of players that we've got in the squad. Let's not fall into the trap of thinking that he's what you want in the. And I'm not saying that you are, Gal Camden, but some people might. So there's a reason why we've been linked with three.
I love this. Is always your position, right? You give a wee bit of praise, but I'm telling you, don't get too fucking ahead of yourself.
No, right. There's a reason.
Then he goes like Cal McGregor. He's a fucking bench player, right? He's a squad player. Don't put him anywhere. He's starting to play well. So Manny, he's played well, but listen, remember, I've told you. Then you get to the point where you need a full retraction about 6 months later. I don't think it'll happen with Beaton, but it'd be great if it did.
What I would say is, see the six months when Somani was saying McGregor should be benched, he should have been benched, and the reason that 6 months later...
The puppet master strike again.
Do you know what I like as well about this is the fact that I've been consistent on Tam, right? Consistent on him. This guy, honestly, see when he talks about Tom Rodgick and he's enthusiastic about him, It's utterly embarrassing.
It really is.
Honestly, I'm surprised Tam can even walk the amount of times you throw him under the bus, man. It's disgraceful.
Barrel lungs, you called him. Anyway,
I know I did. And I don't know. He must have got new lungs, and I'm delighted for him. But Beaton, there's a reason why we're linked with three central mid, you know, well, with a couple of central midfield players in this transfer window. It's because we need more energy in there and we need something different. Beaton, you know, he's been a squad player for 10 years. He might continue to be a squad player, and if he plays the way he's playing, fine, that's good. But he's not, for me, going to be a first-choice Celtic midfielder going forward. We need reinforcements in there, and hopefully we get them.
But Beaton, I think, is the poster boy for where we are. And that,
yeah, exactly. I mean, people are starting to say, oh, he shouldn't have been played, you know, in defence and things like that. But he never impressed any time he was played in central midfield either. And, you know, these guys are stepping up their game, probably their fitness and their attitude towards it under the manager. These are guys who haven't performed not only under, like, Lennon, but then again, they didn't perform consistent. You know, he didn't perform consistently under Rodgers either. So all praise must go to the manager in this, in terms of setting the standards for where they go.
There's two things. One thing, and before, sorry, I'll hand you back, Louis, but the two things is, so people are really, really quick, and I know you are one, Louis, but, to criticise Mikey Johnson, right? But Ange wants Mikey Johnson and Jota to take people on in that position. And if they lose the ball, they lose the ball because they're really, really far up the pitch. And we should be able, between where they lose the ball and where the ball's dropping, for us to turn over, right? But there's a massive difference between that and Beaton taking the ball and driving into midfield and losing it. I watched the Betis game yesterday, and three of the one-on-ones that we had where Betis broke on us were because Beaton was trying to take people on. And I'm not talking about making a pass or, you know, trying to, you know, break into space, just literally trying to take people on, losing the ball in the centre circle or below that. And then, you know, the turnover, he can't turn round because he's... Listen, Beaton's playing well, so I don't want to criticise him overall. What I am saying about Beaton is, as Chris says, let's not try... The guy is a guy... He is the poster boy for where we are, in that it's about making players who probably aren't good enough overall good enough to see us through from a squad perspective. And that's okay. And Beaton's a good player on his day. It's just his day isn't often enough and he's not good enough to start. But at this point, you know, there we are.
Yeah, I mean, just lastly, I think it's some players, you know, Johnson's a funny one. I think Johnson is complete. A lot of the time he's given kind of preferential treatment. He's kind of shielded from criticism a lot of the time. I mean,
Who's he shielded by criticism from?
On the agenda, you said that he's always wanting the ball. I mean, that's not a reason to say that a player's good, like just because he wants the ball. End product has been fucking dire.
See, Mikey Johnson, I'll say Mikey Johnson has not performed so far this season. Now, I am a fan or was a fan of Mikey Johnson, but right now, you know, don't get me wrong, he is losing the ball trying things, right? But see, if you're the wide player in the front three and you're not producing well, you're not playing well. One thing I will say, though, is his ineptitude is masking how poor Abada is. I mean,
yeah.
Anyway,
but the point I was trying to make, though, was it's just different players in different positions will get criticised in different ways. Johnson, I don't think, gets as much criticism as maybe, or written off as quickly as maybe somebody like Stephen Welsh. Stephen Welsh, already people would say, he's going to be a squad player. He's not going to be, our expectations have been lowered. We've seen him enough, expectations lowered. Even though the average age for a quality centre back is maybe a bit higher than maybe a winger is, but I get
one point, right? See, when we've got a full complement of players, everybody's fit, and Ange has brought in maybe three or four. Let's say we bring in four players, the three boys from the J League and another player, and we bring everyone in. I guarantee Mikey Johnson will be part of that squad. Ange Postecoglou, if we're all in on Ange, if we're all in, if we're supporting him, Ange Postecoglou sees something in Mikey Johnson that should make us think, oh, he's seen something that we're not. Guys like Bitton are there because there's no one else. Stephen Welsh, I think, is a boy who will develop, and I'm becoming more and more of a fan of him as I see him. The fact is, though, Mikey Johnson...
Well, Johnson's there now because there's no one else.
No,
you can't say that.
No, but Johnson is... Well, that's my point. If Mikey Johnson is there when everyone, there's a full complement of players, which I think he will be, because I think Mikey Johnson is Ange's first go-to when that front three break down. And I think that when everything is said and done, Ange will get the best out of Mikey Johnson. And that's that. I've got faith in that. And I like a young guy trying something that no one else will try. And also, by the way, I'm frustrated as fuck with him as well. By the way, I'm not going to kid on him, not because I am. But
yeah, listen. If that's how it works out, brilliant. I can't see it. I don't think. I think he would be a squad player. I don't think he'd be anywhere near the starting 11. Certainly, if he had a full strength,
he'll be in the squad ahead of Scales. Put it that way. I had
plenty of signings. I could benefit from going out on loan and getting regular football, to be honest with you. But anyway, we move on. Score prediction for, well, just lastly, I would like to see a complete agreement with you guys. As minimal changes as you have to make, of course, we have to get the 3 points tomorrow. I would like to maybe see a wee bit in light of the situation that they're in, as you say, if we have the potential to make changes early on in the game because we're already a few goals up. Yeah. I would like to see the likes of Moffat play. I would like to see Scales get more game time, maybe even the likes of Liam Shaw at some point to give maybe Roderick or McGregor a rest. But we will see. Prediction, Christopher Gallagher.
I think Celtic will be quite comfortable tomorrow. Fingers crossed if the game goes ahead. I'd like to think it would be a 3-0 victory. Yeah, I'd be happy with a kind of 2-0 up, control of the game, you know, half time, everyone's comfortable, you know, third goal in the 60th minute, see the game out, no bother.
4-0 for this, Bill. So, Manny?
4-1. There will be.
It's Welsh, it's fucked, isn't it?
Who do you like? Skills, I have skills that'll mess up. it'll be a Tam OG. There you go. No, I think we'll race into a 3-0 lead. We'll be comfortable and then we'll just mess about and, you know, something will happen and they'll score and we'll go, hey, boys, watch yourself, and we'll go up and get a fourth. Happy Christmas. Ding, ding, ding.
Let's hope so. Hopefully, although we maybe won't have football games to talk about on the Cynic Weekly, hopefully the common sense prevails and they bring forward the winter break, gives us a chance to recuperate and get some new players in January. And then, you know, full tilt towards the title when the play resumes. This has been a pleasure. If this is going to be the last time you hear from the Cynic Weekly before Christmas, on behalf of us all, I'm sure, I would wish you all a very Merry Christmas. hopefully everybody stays safe. Although we were maybe were frustrated with the restrictions aimed at football in particular, of course coronavirus is very serious for a lot of people. And hopefully everybody stays safe and enjoys the time with their loved ones at the end of the week. Christopher Sormani, Merry Christmas. I wish you absolutely all the best. I hope the boys have a good one.
Merry Christmas to you, Louis, to your family, your young son. Season's greetings. Season's greetings to all listeners. Thank you.
Christopher Gallagher, head of the Strathbungo CSE, tidings to you.
No, Queen's Park.
Queen's Park, sorry, Queen's Park. Yeah, all the best. I hope you have a belter. What's on the menu in the vegan household?
We've got a really nice roast. We're going to my sister's for Christmas, and got a terrific roast, and also some potatoes and all that, and all the trimmings. Looking forward to it. I'll be steaming anyway. Who cares?
Is that a nut roast?
Chris has got a craft ale baked faux duck corn based. Dinner with all the trimmings.
I'm annoyed. With the vegan crackers on the tree. Right, okay.
No, hold on a second. He wants a right
to reply to that one.
I'm annoyed because that was good, Samani. That was really good. That's why I'm annoyed. But also, I just want to say, if you're listening to the Cynic Weekly and you are in any way tempted to listen to Celtic content every single day, January, there'll be no Celtic until the 21st of January, but we'll have content every single day, podcasts, articles and the like. But I have to say that if you're listening to this and you're like, how am I going to bring in the new year? Do you know how you want to bring in the new year? You want to bring in the new year with Mr. Sormani and Mr. McCaffrey. And what will be a New Year spectacular, the Sormani and McCaffrey New Year spectacular, will be released on the 31st of December. The guest list is full. Everything's set out. We've got the nibbles on the go. Last year we did the Christmas spectacular, which was one of the most listened to episodes on the entire subscription service. Then we did the end of season spectacular, which overtook the Christmas spectacular in terms of popularity. Now we've got the New Year spectacular. I'm producing it. I'll just be sitting upstairs with my wee mic, making sure everything's picked up. But alas, Sormani McCaffrey and a whole host of interesting guests will be involved. So if you're interested in seeing out the New Year in a fun and exciting way, go to thecynic.co.
Yes, and if you sign up with me directly, you can get a small discount.
That's not true. That is a lie.
You'll get it. I'll give you it for $6.50. Listen, this has been a pleasure. We have been the Cynic Weekly. Merry Christmas. Look after yourself. Enjoy yourself. And we'll speak to you down the road.